You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Hi, I'm Donna McKechnie, and I'm thrilled to welcome you to the premiere episode of The Ladies Who Lunch. My guests today are Priscilla Lopez, Bjork Lee, and Kelly Bishop, all of my great friends from A Chorus Line.
Oh, look at us. Welcome to The Ladies Who Lunch. This is so exciting. I'm actually quaking a little because I love reunions so much. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
Oh, my gosh.
I just remember the four of us went out for lunch at Joe Allen's.
20 years ago.
20 years ago.
We
were doing
remember.
Something and we all had lunch together.
It's
and
wonderful.
And I thought, we need to do this again. And there when she are. Called me.
So it took 20 years to do
this. This hardly is able to, you know, in our business. Yeah. I mean, we're always pulled away and years separate us, states separate us. But I love reunions. And thinking about A Chorus Line this morning, knowing I'm going to be here with you all, I thought, you know, I never, when we were doing it, 8 shows a week, I had like blinders on. It was so hard to do that show that I never got in. I tried not to get into that Chorus Line fever, you know, everybody loving the show so much. I loved that they loved it. But, you know, it was difficult.
Yeah.
And now when we are able to have, what is this, 45 years?
Mm-hmm.
We come together. Whether
I was only two.
Whether it's, yeah, because you started when you were 6 months
right.
And King and I, you know. Whether it's 2 or 3 or when we did the Central Park reunion or Michael's great party over here,
yeah.
I always come away with such a great feeling. And you know what I'm saying. It's about the show, the humanity. And thanks to Bjork Lee, who has taken it around the world for about 4 or 5 times mm-hmm. and is still doing it. So anyway, I want to...
Those feelings are feelings of... such a bonding that happened
yes.
with all of us. That's what it is.
And we all got along so well. When you really look at that company, and it still happens to this day, we get together for whatever reason, and it's just like it was yesterday that we had the matinee yesterday, and we're still talking about
you
stuff.
Know, and it's
nobody's angry with anyone.
It's something like, so powerful that you go through
yeah.
that I don't even know how to verbalize it sometimes. It's just a feeling. It's a really familial, the brothers and sisters. And when you know, when you open shows and people, other people are directing A Chorus Line. You're so generous to go and visit. And I'm able to, you know, if they ask me to come mm-hmm. down, I always say to the cast, welcome to the family, because
yeah.
that's what it is.
Mm-hmm.
So, oh, I'm getting emotional already. We just started. We're not even eating the crab cakes yet. I'm getting emotional. But I'd like to pretend that the water is champagne.
Oh.
And I would like to toast Michael Bennett.
Let's
for all of the wonderful gifts he has given us and the world that keeps going on and on. So here's to Michael.
Here's to Michael.
Cheers.
Cheers.
With lots of love.
Ah,
Michael Bennett.
Yes. Hear that, Michael? I think you heard it.
Yeah. It's good champagne.
Mm-hmm.
Is he?
Mm-hmm. He's here somewhere.
Very light.
So let's open this up. You know, if you were 3 different women... I might start this whole thing
we
by
We are
saying,
3 different women.
No, well, you are, but not in my heart. You are.
Oh, okay.
But if you were 3 different women that I didn't really know, I would say, well, tell me where you're from and, you know, why'd you start and everything. But
go see
everybody knows that you were born on a Hollywood bed in the Bronx. And you were from Colorado Springs, Colorado, and you were...
Lower East Side
Lower
Chinatown.
Lower East Side Chinatown. So we won't go there. But the next question might be... I'm too formal, aren't I? I'm so excited.
No.
But this is something that interests me, because we covered all this material when we were like doing workshop. You know, the history. First of all, talk about all the history in this room.
Right.
You know,
You were saying that you would come here after rehearsals.
Yes, but you know, at 5, I used to come here. I had an account here, and I would come in between shows, and the doorman, I can't remember his name now.
George. George?
No, it's before that.
She was only
that.
5. also, that's 7.
Yeah. Anyway, my mother would let me go in by myself. She would stay at the door because I would have lunch with Dorothy Sarnoff because I was on a white contract because I was Princess Ying. And so I could have lunch with...
And what was the show, Bjork, that you were in that you were working when you were 5? Okay, go for it. Tell the people.
That's the first musical I ever saw in my whole life, and that's the show that bit me, that made me want to do this.
That was my next question.
Yeah. The King and I.
So, and then you were on unemployment when you were 8, right?
Yes, unemployment.
So you were here all the time.
And for the rest of your life.
Yes, because I outgrew my costume, you know, and so they fired us, so...
Yes. Oh, you mean you outgrew your costume?
Yes. Costume. And guess what's more important, an actor or a costume?
You know how it is. So Sardis is a big part of my life. And when I was, after we opened and I was the dance captain, I'd have to be at the theater at 10 o'clock, so I'd have lunch here. And then I'd go back and work, and then I'd have dinner, and then do the show. So I spent my whole life in Sardis.
Yeah. Mine was Horn and Hardart.
It took me a while. I was such a poor dancer, so to get to Sardis was like... All right, I'm on Broadway now. I can afford Sardis.
Yes, and they still have the half price.
I was just going to ask, do they still have the actors' menu?
Yeah.
So along with that, I'm still thinking about the nights, all the celebrations in this restaurant. Mm. And, you know, something I just, because I knew I was going to see you, and it was just crossed my mind. I don't think of it often, but I remember, I don't know, it was after we moved to the Schubert. Mm-hmm. I remember we were downstairs, and Michael Bennett said to me, and it was just still in the rush of the excitement of it all, and celebrations all over the place, and he said, don't try to compete with this show. It's up here. It has a life of its own. And I had no idea what he was talking about. I went, what do you mean don't compete with the show? I mean, I'm not competing with the show. Yeah. But... when I think of that now with distance, you know, he was already starting to feel, because he wasn't doing the show, he was already feeling, what am I going to do now?
Mm-hmm. All right.
You know, how do I top this? Yeah. And it's funny, it took me about, you know, 20 years to figure that out, but... But the show, and you, Bjork, I mean, here we are, 4 ladies in show business. We have Tony Awards. It's been hard, you know. You have a Tony Award that's about 6 feet tall, right? Where do you put that?
Right by my side.
That was so nice that happened.
Yeah.
I took a picture of you on television in my house, giving your beautiful interview.
You know, it was really a big surprise because, you know, 12 Broadway shows and been in the theater, but this was for my work with National Asian Artists Project, the company that I formed for Asian artists and for the kids that I teach down in Chinatown. So, I mean, this was just like... I couldn't believe it.
Yeah.
You know,
It's a lifetime achievement.
It really is an achievement.
Yeah. Too.
But it's more that you'll be doing this for a long time. You know about that project?
Oh, yes. Yeah. I went down and I saw one of your first performances.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. When I first started, all of you know, just
so
helped me.
We know that you got the bike. Now, the thing that interests me always, and I think that's why people identify with the Chorus Line so much, is like, where did that spark come from? I mean, I'm going to throw it around the table. You know, when you, Hal Prince, who we lost recently and who I just loved, it was such a hero, he said once that every young person needs at least one person to encourage them, to help them, because it's facing rejection every day and it's too hard. So you need someone. But where, for each of you, where did you make that decision? When and what was it, an epiphany, or was it
some person who saw your ability and encouraged
to
you?
To be a dancer, which is what we all were.
Yeah, a teacher. It was a teacher, except Mr. Carr, of course.
Yeah, he wasn't a dance teacher.
Who gave you the
My mother gave
incentive.
It to me, but that's all in the chorus line, isn't it? Yeah. She wanted to be a ballerina, and she couldn't do it, and so she made me the ballerina, and then she used reverse psychology on me to make it bite me. But I'll tell you who gave me the greatest chance, I'd say. I've had a few mentors. I don't know if you all remember Bob Herget.
Yes, I do.
He used to insist when I was in the chorus. He would do industrials.
Right?
Yeah. Wasn't, God bless him, he was really a champion to me. Wasn't an inspired choreographer, but he was an inspired caster. He could cast shows. Mm-hmm. And he kept giving me principal roles in industrials while I was still in the chorus. And it was like, no, you are going to do this principal role. So he was like kind of pushing me anyway. But the real thing that opened the door was Chorus Line. And again, I mean, now I have to thank Michael because of being featured, you know, as we were. And so I remember at that moment, I'm going, and this is before I hadn't even thought about a Tony nomination.
But when we met in Promises, you'd already done several.
It was only my second Broadway show. I had done years of work. I'd done a lot of dancing work, but it was my only second.
In Promises, you were.
I got little speaking parts. Yes. I always got the little speaking
parts.
But
you had a vision of doing more.
I really wanted to be an actor. I mean, loved dancing, and I knew I was a good dancer. I knew I could, but I also knew that it was a very short life. And I knew in order to continue in the business, that acting was the way to go, even with the understanding that older actresses don't get that much work. The roles aren't there. It's better now because of the baby boom growing up. Mm-hmm. But I knew that, but I thought still, at some point, someplace, somebody's going to need a grandma. Somebody's going to need a this. And so at least I'll have some life beyond dancing. But it was, and I remember that with the Chorus Line when I started seeing how excited people were. I went, I just see the door cracking open. That was my acting door. Yeah. I wanted to go through so I could say, okay, I'm not a dancer
anymore. And boy, you sure did. I Googled
lucky.
You.
I had no idea.
Yeah. All the film and the television. Yeah. I mean, I knew you did tons, and I've seen a lot of it, which is great. I mean, when I saw Six Degrees of Separation.
Yeah. Well,
phenomenal.
That was better. I mean, when I actually had the big role at Lincoln Center, it was great.
A dream came true, but you kept
alive. I had to do actually after Chorus Line, because Chorus Line was so huge, and we were also identified as dancers.
Right.
Even though from my perspective, because I wanted to act, I thought this is a perfect swan song for me because now it's about my dancing life, but what I'm actually doing in this show is acting.
Yeah.
You know, and so what I had to do after that, because Chorus Line was such a phenomenon, is I turned down any kind of musical job, anything that had music
in it. That's really hard.
Because I'd say, if I could sing, I might have been a little more amenable to it, but I'm not a singer. I'm frightened of singing. I've had to do it a few times.
But the only way I
wanted to convince people that I was no longer a dancer.
Yeah.
You know? And it finally, out in L.A., it wasn't a problem because they were going, what, a Chorus Line? What's a Tony? You know, but back here it was different. And it worked. I was God, I've been lucky. You know, really lucky.
No, you've worked hard.
And I've worked
hard. And you're good. You're very talented.
And I'm really, really,
so Priscilla,
really good.
So what are the differences between what are stories that projected out of a Chorus Line and what really, because I know you both went to Performing Arts High School. Is that what you meant?
On my phone. I have your high school yearbook picture on my phone. Yes, and it's so cute. And then there's another one when you're doing, you know, a big stretch. You've got, what costume was that? It was like
a tarantella or something. Yes.
Did you know each other?
No. She was a couple of years before me.
All right.
And plus in the dance department, I went for the actor. I wanted to go as a dancer for performing arts, but that's another song that's yet to be written.
So you went
because I had trauma before.
So you wanted to go, and so
yes.
But before high school, what were you about?
Well, before high school, I mean
flamenco dancing.
But before that, it was the television.
Yeah,
and I would watch television, and I would so desperately just want to crawl inside the television.
Were you a musical kid? Or you just loved the dancing when you saw it?
Well, just, I love the movies, but even just the, you know, the regular TV shows. Yeah. You know, I wanted to be part of the family, a father knows best, and I wanted to be in those families. I just wanted to be in those worlds, and I just wanted to crawl in. But I think what happened was, my mother in Puerto Rico, she always loved the movies. I mean, my sister was supposed to be Priscilla, but she had a neighbor named Priscilla. She didn't name her. She'd just seen Rebecca of Sunnybrook Farm, so she named my sister Rebecca. And she got Priscilla from Priscilla Lane, the old actress.
Yeah.
So she, you know, was into that world. And so she was, like your mother, putting on me something that she wanted. And I was very happy to take it. Yeah, you know, she tried with my sister, didn't want to try.
Well, she inspired you then to keep going.
Yes.
Yeah.
Or just to start. And yeah. I remember... when I did finally get into the high school, you know, when I was in the High School of Performing Arts, and it was so horrible, and I just wanted to leave. And she said, no, you worked too hard. You're not leaving that school. So I went, you know, with my Bible to school. It's funny. But anyway, yes, my mother inspired me. And but it's, you know, the first line, of course, I was dying to be a serious actress. So that was always kind of my thing. I wanted to be an actress because that's what, and
so
I was
then, but,
giving
but then
them,
you got into dance class and
well,
then started
Well, my mother
going,
gave me all those dance classes, yeah. You know, and it was acting in a way. You're acting when you're dancing, you know. And
Michael Bennett said that. I remember him saying it, and I don't know, it was sometime around, I think while we were doing Chorus Line, because I worked for him a couple times, and he said, dancers are the best actors. But it's true. If you're given a combination across the floor and everything, you kind of create the world of this dancer. You're doing the steps and yeah. the way they were given. But there's a thing. It's like, oh, and I'm floating up here, or something's chasing me, or you.
Well, you know,
create,
before language, there was gesture. I
mean, yes,
that's
yes.
How primitive
yeah.
people.
Yeah.
Had to go. Nah,
it still works with dogs. It's like.
Oh, my goodness. Look at this.
Food, glorious food. Hot sausage.
This is so wow. That looks gorgeous.
Oliver.
Oh. Oliver.
Thank you so much.
You're all having grown-up food.
Yeah.
Wow. And what are you having?
I'm having mushrooms with mozzarella. And tomatoes. It's sort of a sandwich. I'll mm-hmm. take the bread away. And I just want the
fries.
Oh my!
Fries.
We might have to have one that falls
like
off your plate.
Yes, we may have to just fall into your fries.
You have some fries.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on Essie Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at OutsidersMusical.com.
So, you know, it's when I think of dancing, did you have any teachers that saw you, in other words, really saw you? Or
Once we got here?
When you were a ballet dancer. I mean, you started...
You mean, but who saw you as a professional dancer afterwards?
Yeah, who really saw your...
Or saw the talent before, or what?
Yeah.
Well, I knew I had that, the Romanoffs, my ballet teachers. They knew the talent. And he was Dmitri Romanoff. He was the regisseur of American Ballet Theater.
And he was in Colorado Springs.
No, actually, in Denver, ABT had decided, and it was weird, you know, serendipity. I had a pediatrician as a little kid. He had dancing daughters. He had three daughters, and two of them were really good, and they were taking it at the best ballet school in Denver. And they both, one of them ended up becoming a member of the Court of Ballet and Ballet Theater some years later. But somehow Dr. Fisher convinced Lucia Chase and the board of directors or something to open a ballet theater school in Denver.
That's amazing. Wow.
And that's where the
Romanoffs
come along.
So
with
that,
it
and
great, not only great
they
training.
They had a school in Denver?
Yes. And then when, just about the time my parents got divorced, they decided they weren't going to keep the school anymore. It was there for about 8 years or so. Mm-hmm. And we had great teachers because in the summertime we would get the premier dancers from ballet theater would come and teach master classes.
Wow.
I mean, we had such incredible training. And so the Romanoffs decided to move to San Jose, California. And guess what we did? We got in the car and we went to Northern California. We weren't in San Jose. Wow. We were down the peninsula from San Francisco, but we went to... So sort of like the ice skaters and the gymnasts and everything.
Right.
We
followed.
It was partly because my mother said...
So you would go there for a while?
What? In California?
Yeah.
We lived there. I lived there. I graduated high school there.
Oh, my God.
You moved from
used to schlep
you
down to San
the
Jose.
Dancers.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. So, and it was great training. No question.
I guess.
So, yeah.
Wow. And your training was in New
York. Well, I started in Brooklyn. Minerva Nove.
What a good name.
Minerva Nove. And that was a studio that did tap, ballet,
is
acrobats.
Is that her real name?
Minerva Nove Dance Studios.
Oh,
and it was on Brooklyn Heights on Girolamo Street. And I would go and, I started with tap. That was the first thing that happened, tap dancing. And then I saw that, there were ballet classes. And so gradually, did a little bit more. But it was a school. I got my great tap technique there. I mean, she was a tapper. The other stuff was... But the school was all about recitals, So it all became about costumes and the mother sewing my costumes and all of that sort of stuff. But after about 3 years of that, she went, no. So she opened, this is how she found all my teachers. She opened with Yellow Pages. And she found Maria Novelska in Carnegie Hall.
Right.
And she was from the Bolshoi, so I started with her. And she
found
Ernest Carlos for tap. And then Phil Black was in his studio also, so I went there, and Tina Ramirez, first it was Lola Bravo for flamenco, and Tina Ramirez was one of her students who had been touring the world with her sister Coco, and they came back, and so she sort of handed over the studio to Tina, who had told me, I'm going to form a dance company. Ballet Hispanico, right? She'd been telling me that for years before that. I broke a heart. I said, no, I want to dance on Broadway. And she went, huh? And, because I,
So that propelled you to the Performing Arts High School?
No, Performing Arts High School was, there's so many. My mother. I'm going to write that book. I was also taking singing lessons with Emilia Del Terzo. At Carnegie Hall, she lived in those apartments up top. It was like going into a castle in these turrets and things. It was amazing. And so she got me sort of hooked up with this agent for children. Her name was Dora Weissman. And she had all these kids, whatever. And she really, wasn't that into me, whatever. But she did send me out one day for this audition for West Side Story, to be an extra in the movie of your West Side Story. And I was 11, and you had to be like 12 or 14 or something. So I put my hair up, and they picked me. They picked me just, to be an extra. And then it turns out that my brother would come with me because they were filming up on 103rd and 3rd Avenue. So he would come with me from Brooklyn to, keep an eye on me. He winds up in the movie. I've got that on my phone, too.
Oh, my God.
He gets a close-up, and I'm in the back.
Where were you?
I was in the back going, you see that spot over there? That's me. But that's where I met all the dancers.
Yes. Winters.
David Winters and...
Tony Mordenti.
Tony Mordenti. I mean, they were all there. It was like, oh, my God. And I hear about this school, the High School of Performing Arts. And I go, wow. And then I'm told that if I go and I study with, the head of the drama department, Gertrude Scher, I'll be a shoo-in.
Oh, I remember her.
In.
Gertrude Scher. You studied with her.
You remember.
What?
How do you remember? Because you didn't go there, did you?
No. But I knew all of those because I was on my own by then trying to make a living here. Uh-huh. And terrified. But David Winters is the guy who, he was going with my roommate or my soon-to-be roommate, and he picked me up at the bus station when I ran away from home. And he didn't know who we, but he said, I'm picking up this teenager. And he came down to the Greyhound bus that was over on 8th Avenue then. Or, yeah, 9th Avenue. And, you know, saw me sitting there, you know, and took me to 54th.
David Winters.
So I knew, and they were all my teachers after the movie.
Elliot Feld, too.
Yeah, Elliot Feld, mm-hmm. and they were all teaching. And
Jamie Rogers.
Yeah,
Jaime Rogers.
I came to New York.
They were the elite.
These, I try to tell, you know, when I'm able to do master classes, I try to say the names and explain that when I came to New York, it's like when kids came to see A Chorus Line or Hamilton now, you know. West Side Story, those dancers and actors were like iconic already, and they were like gods to the young dancers mm-hmm. in New York. And then most of them became, Claude Thompson, most of them became my teachers
mm-hmm. yeah.
at June Taylor's dance studio. And, you know,
you start
thinking about this stuff, and it's like, you know, your mind expands yeah. and all the files
crazy.
Fall out.
Or explodes.
You know? So, but all those connections are yeah.
But what happened was I went down to study with her, and it was not a good thing.
She was a modern teacher.
Modern. Yeah. And I loved modern dance. I really did.
Oh,
I
yes.
loved modern. It was just so...
Why wasn't it good?
Because she... I don't respond well to, you suck, and you better get better. Yep. So I go, I suck, you know. So, but I wanted... And it was just so painful because... Everyone in that class would have been on a Broadway stage or anywhere performing.
No.
They were just like
they want to
people.
Be dance
yeah.
companies.
Yeah. No. But I'm saying the people in the class that I went to, she had a studio on 14th Street mm-hmm. or something. And I went there and she would, and then she'd always be, you know, on me. And then one day she said, listen, if you don't improve, just don't come back here anymore.
And if you don't improve, I'm going to go home and improve tonight.
By myself. So yeah. I went home. And I said, but I wanted to go to the High School of Performing Arts. Right. So this is where Dora Weissman comes in. She had given me these monologues, you know, that my mother, because my mother was typing for her. That's what she did. She typed scripts for her in change of these lessons, these acting lessons, which were just giving me monologues. And so I had two monologues that I knew, A Date with Judy and, The Bad Seed. I hit him with the shoes, you know. So I did that, and then...
Do they call it dramatics or acting, then?
Drama. They call it drama.
Okay.
Drama. So, and the other monologue was, Mother, look at this dress you want me to wear to the party. Last year's dress. I'm going to be the Lockheeding stock, you know. So I did these two monologues, and I got in. And then I spent the rest of the 3 years hiding from Gertrude Scher. She's going to see me, and she's going to get me out of the school.
Yeah.
But then, you know, that got... Mr. Carp came on to the scene.
Mr. Carp. Oh, my God.
Mr. Olvin.
The best thing about English teacher.
I mean, I love performing arts. It gave me so much, you know, but the thing it gave me the most was I left there saying, if I survive this, I can survive anything.
Priscilla, because it was by now, right, first of all, how wonderful that song is, your song, and how so many young girls and boys... relate to that.
I know.
It's just...
Adults, too, because it's everybody's story.
Yes,
there's the employer who doesn't like you. It's the, you know...
But for a young person to be shot down, you know, like
yeah,
that.
Yeah.
Terrible.
So...
So you made it.
Yes.
And then what happens was, you know, the school is 46th. It was on 46th Street, just between 6th and 7th Avenue. And everyone's going to college or whatever, and I'm going... I'm going to go to Oshkosh to learn theater. It's right there. I'm going up the block.
Do you know, when I studied with Uta Hagen was one of my teachers. I loved her so much. I was terrified of her, but she's such a wonderful person as I got to know her more as a woman. But she had this thing. It was very noble. She only allowed students to be in her classes for 2 years. you know, they're down on Bank Street, mm-hmm. And she'd kick them out. She'd kick you out because she would say anything that you can learn technically about acting, you can learn in 2 years, and now the rest is out there, and definitely. You've got to learn from experience,
true.
Right?
True.
So I always thought that was fantastic.
And you also teach there too.
I have done. I haven't. I want to go back and do more of that. I haven't. I've been too busy.
Did any of us go to college? I don't think so.
No. Yeah.
We went to the College of Life.
Well, the College of Broadway.
You know, that I knew that early on that I was never going to go to school.
Well, I couldn't wait to get out of high school.
I just hated sitting behind a desk. I mean, I felt trapped from kindergarten until my senior year. I'm going, I'll stay here until I get out of here. And then, I mean, there wasn't any money.
But was it about dancing or just you hated school?
No, I hated sitting at a desk and listening. I finally started paying it a little attention in high school and discovered that there was some really interesting stuff to learn and was stunned to realize how easy it was. I mean, I suddenly got straight A's and I'm going, seriously? All these years I thought it was stupid? This is just, I just wasn't paying attention.
Yeah.
But the thing is, I didn't want to go to college. I said, well, I'm going to take a dancer's life is so short. I'm going to take 4 years before I start it. The best, same thing. Best teachers are in New York. Why would I
go? But you know what? I've noticed, maybe you, because you travel a lot too, what they have, because I ran away. I wrote a book about, not running away, but about
15.
Yeah.
Wow.
But what they have now, and I don't know if I would have felt quite as desperate as I did to get out, because I had no support in terms of, there were no high school of performing arts in Detroit. There were no colleges with musical theater programs.
There was nothing.
So there was nothing to
the only
to attract
me. Of that age.
But now there is. Yeah. That's the point.
There is. Yeah.
Good teachers.
The fantastic, yeah. I mean, not all, you're right about dancing though. Any professional dancer, yeah. I mean, ballet dancer, it's a short lived.
And that, I was ballet. I mean,
right, that's
when
a
you talk about your school with the recitals and the tap, this school was so strict, there was not only no tap, there was no jazz. There was, the closest we got to having like kind of fun was character dancing.
Okay.
And once someone got a little bit of flamenco.
Oh.
And we didn't do recitals. They called them demonstrations. So we did it the Russian style.
These are the Romanovs.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. And you'd have a black leotard, pink tights. It would start with the smallest child, the smallest class, and everybody was wearing the same thing, and they would come out and they would curtsy and then move off, and then as the classes grew up, and then they would do short little ballets, little numbers really, with each one. Of course, by the time you got to being one of the top dancers, like 18, 17 years old, then occasionally they would put like a practice tutu over the black thing. I mean, that was...
Oh, wow.
That's the wild, and that was the way it was. And also, the older dancers had to choreograph a number for younger dancers, so we'd have to watch
classes. So they were like 15 or 16,
the
older dancers?
Yeah, the older dancers, and then you would go to the classes, the younger classes, and you could pick, they didn't want you to do solos. I did actually 1 year, just did a solo, but you'd pick anywhere from 2 to 10 children. And you would find your music, you would choreograph it, you would do the whole thing, you would rehearse them, and you would present. And that was part of your ballet training. Mm-hmm. So at that point, I was so ingrained with ballet that the only college in the United States that I knew of was in Utah, which Utah still has a great ballet department, I understand.
Yes, they do. Mm-hmm.
But that was the only place that had ballet, and I thought, well...
Yeah. We worked... Googled you. I thought I knew a lot about. Well, I do know a lot about you guys.
You know a lot.
But I forgot, or I forgot.
That's good.
We did the Radio City Court of Ballet, not together, but you did that, right?
Yeah, that was my first job.
My first job in New York. So, I did West Side Story, a little tour,
and then you went to Radio City.
I was so young. Radio City was my first job in New York. When they had the Court of Ballet. Mm-hmm. Do you remember that?
Of course.
And ballet, when you think of it.
To go.
Yeah.
You know, and that was the hardest audition. I auditioned.
Me too. Same thing. Harder than my ballet theater audition.
My first big audition, ballet audition, was with Lucia Chase, ABT. And I was clueless. I had only been to one audition where I got, you know, this little tour that I had just finished, you know, this one-night stands in the what they called Negro colleges then, you know, before civil rights. So that I just came back out of. That was mind-blowing. And then I auditioned for her, and it's a week. You come in with a big room of dancers, and you do all these combinations. Next day you go in, you had to come in, you know, like 5 days. And there would be like half, the room would be half empty. There would be half as many, rather.
Oh, they didn't make it.
And then the next day, there'd be, you know, 10. And then 5. And I was still there.
Wow, that's great.
And I was going, I had no idea what was going to happen, but I needed a job, and I needed to get in the company. And the guy that I just worked with was auditioning, too. So Lucia Chase came over to me, and at the last day, they have the young male dancers come in to partner, and do on point. It's all on point.
That was a really extensive audition.
Yeah, this was hard, but Radio City was harder.
It was harder. I remember having to.
But anyway, I didn't get. But I have to tell you what
you didn't get.
This is how distorted my perception was then. I got right down to the end. And there were like maybe 5 couples. Mm-hmm. And she pulled me over and she said, look, I don't know you. You're very young. And we're going to Russia this year. And I think you have to study here for a year. And then I'll bring you into the company after that.
Well, that was encouraging.
No, but I didn't take it that way. I took a rejection. I thought... Because I was so desperate to have a job.
Because you were young.
I was so young. I had no experience. But you know, when I think back, I go, oy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But anyway, so I couldn't. That's when I went to jazz class, and because I was one of those little ballet snobs.
Yeah.
And
I couldn't. Watch you. I used to peek through the door and watch you dance with Crimey Rogers.
My God. That's right. Were you in that class?
Well, I. Was trying to get in.
I was so wrong in my reaction. But at the same time, I don't know how these things happen, but I found my better nature, you know, because I was never built like a ballet dancer. It would have been too difficult. But then to just out of desperation to get work, to learn that. And that's when all the West Side Story guys came in. And what were you doing then?
Well, I was, after performing arts, I was offered to go to Juilliard.
So you'd already been in like 2 Broadway shows,
yes.
Right?
And
did you audition?
And so I got a phone call.
Did you audition for Juilliard?
Yes. And so I got a phone call in the middle of the night. I graduated, and it was Carol Haney, who I had danced with in Flower Drum Song. You know, I was only 12. And she remembered 4 years later, and she said, Claude Thompson was in the show and recommended me again. He said, she's grown up, blah, blah, blah. And so she said, come and do the
she's
show.
She's grown up 3 inches.
Yeah. come and do the show. It's called Bravo Giovanni, Michelle Lee's first show.
Oh, my God, yes.
And I said, well, I'm going to go to Juilliard in September. She said, well, come for the summer, and then you know, when we come to Broadway, well, we went out of town. It was, you know, we came to Broadway. And, of course, I wanted to be on Broadway. And so, goodbye, Juilliard. I said, I'll always be there. But then I was sitting at the booth. Is it the booth? No. What's next to between the Schubert and the Broadhurst? And I'm sitting on the fire escape in the summer, and I look across the street, and they are putting a sign up called Mr. President, Irving Berlin's show. And I said, oh, my God, wouldn't it be great to, you know. So everybody in that show, because we closed, went, across the street to audition.
Or, like Michelle, she went into How to Succeed.
Yep.
Because that was my first Broadway show. So we're, it's okay.
And then, so I got in, and Peter Gennaro was the choreographer. And and then there was a knock on the door, and they said, there's a man upstairs that, you know, saw you in the show. And I went upstairs, and he said, I'm directing a show, and I think you'd be very good for it. Because I played, you know, I only played kids in the shows. You know, I played the grocery girl for Nanette Fabre. And so, well, you know, I was just...
You were good at that.
I wanted to
and
be...
And you were a Milla Kitty.
And I was a Milla Kitty.
Well, as you were an adult growing up.
Yes. Yeah. And so it happened to be Norman Jewison.
Oh, wow.
And the show was Here's Love.
Oh, and did he direct that?
Yes, and he was let go, and Stu Oster took over, and Michael Bennett was in the show. Okay. But I had already met Michael years before.
Now, Michael Kidd choreographed Here's Love, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm. But Michael Bennett used to come to...
Oh, I remember. Did he do that...
He was a rag doll.
Before I knew him, before Hullabaloo... God.
That's where I saw you and Michael. I was at those auditions, but I didn't get the job.
For Hullabaloo? Oh, my God, and Leland Palmer. And
yeah.
But when I saw Here's Love, I didn't know Michael yet. And I looked at, he played this, like...
Rag doll.
Mm-hmm. And I went, who is that? It was fantastic. Did you ever see that?
No. Do you know
he was like, had
there
no...
There are laser discs with all the Hullabaloos?
Yeah.
You've seen them? It's like crazy.
But it's funny. It's like, it's hilarious to me.
No, it's great.
But some of the choreography, that was David Winters, is really
yes,
good.
And he took me aside. He said, you know, I like your style, but this is TV and we work like this. And, you know, you're not picking up fast enough. I went,
Oh, my God.
That's a lot of people telling you how lousy you were.
I know. But I kept going.
Yes, you did.
Also, you certainly did. Because can I... Do you want to talk about what you're going to be in The Neighborhood?
Yeah.
And I don't know anything. I haven't seen this, but you just finished in...
Williamstown. I went there 2 years ago.
And the play is?
The play is called Grand Horizons. And it deals with this older couple, not me, but this older couple who are getting divorced. I'm always the other woman in these plays. I love it.
I love it.
And so it's a really good play. It's written by... Bess Wahl, her new play is opening Friday. Is it Friday? Thursday. She's very young, and she writes, you know, so knowledgeably about older couples and older people and the situation and all of that and relationships. And it's a really wonderful play. You get the point of view from the wife who wants out. The husband is going, huh? The kids are going, what? And
it's wonderful working up there, isn't it?
Yeah, it's really good.
You're going to be at the Helen Hayes?
At the Helen Hayes, it's going to come... We start rehearsals like before Thanksgiving and then preview during Christmas and then it
Priscilla,
opens like in
congratulations.
No, it's
that
nice.
Sounds really nice.
And I don't have
really
to talk good. Like this, you know? I'm going to talk. Well, anyway, so, yeah.
And you can eat
great.
At Sardi's.
And I can eat at Sardi's. It's right next door. No, it was
and
like
Kelly,
just
they're,
at Sardi's.
They're flying you back and forth still to L.A. She gets these flights.
No,
come on
I
out.
Haven't been out for a while.
All right.
I haven't been
I just made that up.
Yeah. I'm willing to, as long as they put me in first class. I was just
yes.
I was just recently offered a short version of a short film. I don't know what it was.
It was a sentence.
Yeah, it was a sentence. It was like a comma.
It was a good sentence, though.
And they said the pay was terrible, but the actually right now, because I've been off the grid a bit because my husband was so sick. And So they said, you know, it'll just be a couple of days' work and this money is in. And they said, and of course, they'll fly you out and put you up. And they said, we're not sure that it'll be first class, but... And I went, whoa, stop. I said, I've spent enough of my life in the back of planes. I said, I don't do that. And I won't, you know. I just really, really... And I never, as days went on, it was only like a week and a half that from the time of the offer till I turned it down, that every day I thought... I'm not sure, and now I'm thinking, I don't think it looks very good, and now I'm thinking, God, this is going to be really hard by the time I got around to saying, you know, I don't want to do this job. Then I went, oh, good. You know, why did you...
And you could be here.
Yeah, exactly. And, of course, I would have come back yesterday, but I just couldn't. And there's that other thing, that age thing. It's like, Priscilla and I were talking about it, because we talk all the time. It's hard. Traveling is hard. We all do a lot of traveling.
Yeah.
But it's harder than it used to be, and you lead a little more sleep.
Well, because they make it harder. I mean, look what you got to get to the airport 3 hours before.
Well, that's true. It used to be an adventure. Then, now it's sort of like getting, on parole or something to get on the plane.
It's punishment.
Yeah, it is.
And
so.
You got to get naked.
Yeah,
ooh,
I know.
In your stockings.
You do?
Well, you know, they go through the thing.
Wow.
You know, and,
I know, I'm with your arms up, and they take pictures of you. I don't know.
So, I have two words for this table. Antonio Banderas.
Yikes.
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
So this is really exciting. Can I?
I don't know anything.
You don't? Oh, good.
I mean,
so,
okay,
by your, well, please talk
did,
about this.
We did a Chorus Line at City Center, and Antonio Banderas came to see the show.
Okay.
He is building a theater in his hometown in Malaga, Spain.
Yeah. And does he live there or was he born there?
He was born there. Okay. He lives in London now. And I just got back from London seeing him, working with him. And he wants to play Zach in A Chorus Line and produce it in Spanish in Malaga.
Amazing.
And so because he won Best Actor at the Cannes Film Festival for his new movie, Pain and Glory, he has to be away from rehearsals to go to all the festivals. New York, he's going to be here in New York. And so he flew me over to London.
Oh, so
he lives in London, in Surrey. And so I worked with him, and he's going to be good. He's not going to do the dance combination, but he does the entire show.
He does the one, though, right?
Yeah. Oh, yes. He does all the ones.
Fantastic.
And the finale and everything. And he's such a good actor.
Oh, he's wonderful.
Yeah.
Wonderful.
And so it's
and
very
Richard
exciting.
And Richard J. Alexander, why I'm so excited, I want to talk about it. He has extra miles he's going to give me so I can go to the opening. Because I'm such a big fan.
Yes.
Oh, that's great.
And you've already worked on it over there, haven't you?
I was in Barcelona and Madrid and Malaga auditioning dancers. So I was there all the month of April. And we have a great cast. And they come from Chile and from Mexico, London, Berlin, Austria, and all of Spain. So it's going to be, different accents, but all Spanish. And that's what he wants, which is great.
And when does it open?
We open October 25th. So we start in September. And it's going to be exciting.
Oh, it's wonderful.
That's really great.
And
great.
My assistant, Louis Villabon, he's helped translate the book because I've done it in Chile and we've done it in Mexico, but it's different. So Antonio and Louis have been working on these Spain, Spanish script.
Fingo, fingo, fa-fa-fa-fa. Are they going to have their list when they talk?
I hope not, but.
Wow.
So it's really exciting. Yeah.
Wow.
And, I fly in his private plane from,
I'm really jealous.
So he's been so generous.
What a great thing he's doing for.
For his hometown.
For himself, but for his hometown, because this will be the first professional production, right?
Yes. There's theater in Madrid and Barcelona. But because Malaga is on the coast, so many people come there for vacations, and there's no good theater. So he wants to bring people from New York to come and, direct. And
That's fantastic.
Yeah. Okay, now.
So after 45 years, this is the cherry on the cake.
Awesome. Pretty cherry.
You've had lots of cherries on the cake.
Yes, I've had lots of cherries on the cake.
We all have lots of cherries on the cake to be still doing what we want to do.
But, I just have to say, having the honor of directing and keeping this show going, and I always talk about every single one of you. And
You do. I've done four productions with you back in the day.
And back in the day.
Can I interject one little thing? Because you are, there's a few people on this earth that are I call them angels on earth. You're one of them. My other real estate agent who got my apartment is another one. Because it was divine intervention. It had to be because I had no money to get this apartment. Anyway, but Bjork, I was living in L.A. dying practically, trying to get better after arthritis, and I was stricken trying to be an actress and going up to these jobs and so disappointed in the life. I just didn't like it out there. It's a beautiful place. I love the people I met, but, it's just not my style. So I'm sitting there as life kind of, there's a phone rings and it's Bjork and she says, I am doing a national tour and then we're going to.
Michael had just sold this stock in amateur rights. And so, all the regional theaters were calling to do the show.
Sure.
Right. So, you had talked about a national tour.
It was a national tour.
And I just went, and I remember, I don't remember the whole conversation, but I remember saying to you, oh, Bjork, I haven't danced in so long. I don't think I can do it. I mean, and I just, this hit me, you know, so hard. I went, I just can't do it. And then she said, you have 3 months. You know?
It was a tour.
Yeah. You have 3 months. And I hung up the phone and I got, because I was going to the gym and doing all that stuff.
Yeah.
But I went to find out who's teaching dance in my little area in the valley. And I did, and I got came in.
Go?
I was so nervous.
Where'd you go in the valley?
Oh, God, on Moore Park, and there was a little dance studio there.
Debbie Reynolds Studios.
And, yeah, Debbie Reynolds and Joe Tremaine. I went to Joe Tremaine. And
but that company.
Stanley Holden, the ballet.
Oh, yes.
Wonderful. I went to Stanley.
That was the company that I woke up one day and said, you know, I should get the original company. And so I started calling around, but everybody was busy and doing things.
Except me.
And Sammy had just opened his flower shop, and so I got Nicholas Dante.
Wow.
Yes.
Wow. Did he go to, he went to Tokyo with us?
No.
No, that was a different.
That was, yeah. That
different.
Was,
anyway, four companies, and the last one was in the round, and that was definitely the swan song for
that
me.
That was.
But, really, you know,
I had people facing that way, and people facing that way, and people facing that way.
Oh, but, you know, very hard to do a show about a
Westbury.
You know, because you use
Westbury.
You know, an audience, if you help them, they will use their imagination.
Oh, yeah,
there was no mirror. So it's like all of a sudden the mirror's here, and then I turn, and then the mirror's there. And then, you know,
he
right?
He should have been like on a line, but like a slow.
Thrust. Like a thrusting.
No, just very, you know, like when you sit in those restaurants that go around, and before you know it, you've made a circle. So
try doing your double tour.
So I called up Michael, and I said, Michael, I'm doing it in the round. What should I do? He said, pause. He says, put some sticks that are white on everybody's shoes. This is his advice to me.
What?
Yes. And that'll be the line. Wherever they are, that's where the line is.
He must have been. Like,
oh, he was.
Yeah.
Or doing it. Yeah. Hopefully. Yeah.
But at the end of that tour, Donna McKechnie said, I want to play big cities, because that was only small towns. And I want to play big cities, and I want to go to Japan. And so we
Did
got
I
your,
say that?
Yes.
I was that bold?
Yes, you were.
Wow,
so
good for me.
The two girls got dressed up and went down to Uncle Joe's. Joe Papp.
Oh,
and
my
said,
God, I forgot
Uncle
that.
Joe, Donna wants to, you know, and he said, absolutely. So she started playing big cities, and then we went to Japan.
That's right. And then Paris.
Japan
and,
is crazy.
And then
they
Paris.
They love theater there, and they love Chorus Line.
Oh.
It's like, it's part of their season. Every year they do.
That's amazing.
They
oh, my
do
God, they were great. It was great in Japan. We were sold out before we arrived, right, Bjork?
Yep.
They even sold out all the 70, at that time, $72 a program, these big books. They were sold out.
I loved Japan. I went there with Pippin, and these little girls would be waiting outside after Pippin.
Yeah,
and
they
go,
cry.
You... You, Diana Morales? I go, yeah. I'm the old lady now, but yeah.
Swinging
but they
on
were
the...
just like,
oh, yes, they know who
so
you are.
They were so crazy, and they had the Chorus Line posters in the subways.
Yeah.
You know, I took a picture in front of the Chorus Line. It's
That's
like
so
no
great.
Other place in the world, Japan. Tokyo is just
it's
like,
wonderful.
Wow.
I just remember one night, Donna's doing her dance, and all of a sudden the mirrors go up. And then she's still dancing, and then the mirrors come down. They go back up again. And then there's a knock on her door. And says, oh, Miss McKechnie, I'm so sorry. I'm the technical. She says, oh, it happens in New York all the time. And then the guy comes in. He says, Miss McKechnie, I'm so sorry. And she says, oh, it happens. He says, they fired me. He was gone in 24. They do not mess around in Japan.
Well, they didn't put their dialogue in sync with our jokes.
I
know that. They would have this was in the beginning of that technology.
It's very different now.
You know,
yeah.
I'm sure. But you would say something, and they would get it delayed react. So if you made a joke, it was like all of a sudden in a serious line, you go.
right.
Like, what happened?
Oh,
it was fantastic. It was it was just so. Thank you.
I talk about you all the time, and how close we are, how close we were, and how close we are. You know, Rondon is a grandfather.
Yes, I said. Did you see that?
I saw the email.
Rondon.
Yeah.
And but you know, the the
it
Swedish.
It goes on and on. Like,
it goes on
goes
and on.
On. Like, yeah.
So the actors and actresses in Stockholm wrote me. It's 40 years that I did the show there.
Oh, nice.
And they're having a reunion. I mean, every place that I've been in Australia, they're having a reunion. I mean, this show is forever.
It's
it really is. Yeah. You know, we didn't realize what we were doing.
No,
but
well, you know, didn't you feel, though, that it was really artistically, it was going to be successful?
I thought it was incredibly amazing. I loved it. But I even
you
in the very
think
beginning
it would
downtown,
be so
I went,
far-reaching.
I'm not sure that ever, I think a lot of people are going to love this, but I'm not sure everybody's going to like it.
You thought it was like too about show business too much?
Maybe too show busy and just too, as much as, I mean, to me it was like, yes, now I'm really doing something. And as I said, I was so focused on acting, is that I thought this is a little too different. It's a little too out there that the theater audience, the musical audience is going to go, I don't know if I like it. And it's like always happens, especially off Broadway, when you become successful, is pretty when the first two or three limousines are outside before the show, you go, okay, we're cool. You know, let me see. What
and
can
listen,
I buy? Because I'm going to have a job
we
here
had,
in 15 years now.
If I'm correct in this, there was no publicity. I mean, nope. People would come to it see some of the shows, the other shows down there, and they would be sold out. And the box office would say, why don't you go over there to the Newman Theater because mm-hmm. there's some new show in there. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And there was no... so what impressed me is that all of a sudden people were coming and sitting on the steps.
Sitting on the steps.
And flying in. And that's when you know. But you still don't really know. It's like how... You know that what I used to call us the hothouse tomatoes, we were like so insular.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Having no idea that it would connect on such a level, mm-hmm. with a personal level with everybody.
Yeah, that's
the metaphor, I guess, wasn't,
everyone,
didn't appreciate
everyone
that.
Everyone could find it. I mean, everyone could find the, what it really was, I kept wondering what was it, because people had asked me, what was it that really resonated with so many people? I mean, like 99% of people. And I think it was actually a celebration of the individual.
Yeah.
It's besides all of the things about being rejected and about being on the line trying to get a job and all of those other things, the real thing was you had this sort of mass of people who were called the chorus.
Right.
But it was about the individual.
Well, when Cassie, you know? I always loved that place in the musical where I would confront him.
Yeah.
And
mm-hmm.
say,
they're
he's
all
special.
Special.
She's
yeah.
special.
Yeah, right.
You know, she missed what he was talking about.
So, but so do you remember, now we're getting ready to put the show on, and we've got to take our bows. I remember when
yes.
we had to wear those
the
wigs
waist, the
and
waist.
Disappear and become one yeah. again? You
I
know,
blocked like, it out. I have, yeah. no,
I have no idea.
Donna, you
listen.
Went to Michael.
No, I came out without the wig. I said, I'm sorry, I don't have enough time to change. I just couldn't make it.
Yes.
It's too fast. I said, I'm not taking a bow with a friggin' blonde wig on after, you know, we've all done our thing.
My favorite, though, I thought.
Donna went to Michael and said, look, I just, you know, nobody even knows who I am.
Mm-hmm. Right, nobody knew.
Just done a 12-minute
number. But that
number.
Was part of the thing, too, this. That he wanted
yeah.
to do.
Well, remember, another version of that was he wanted us all to be in unison, and one of the guys would take a lady
from
the audience,
right.
And then she would
make
be
her
take her arms, and they would be walking in front while we were doing the finale. She would be strutting with these
her
two
stuff,
gentlemen
yeah.
up in front, and then they talked that through and went, "No, we might get into trouble
we
with that."
Yeah,
I was supposed to come out on a ladder with the boys pushing me. K. Cole was going to be on a piano. Pushing them. That was a whole. We
I
were having our individual
I'm
bows.
Sure I just went into some kind of
that
fear
I don't
state.
Remember
so
at all.
You know, mm-hmm. there's something I wanted. This is maybe an opportunity to bring it up, but it's like I think about. I don't think about it often, but every once in a while, when I am doing master classes, I wanted to impart about how what I learned so much from Michael was the courage that it must have taken him to never give up on his vision, because he had the courage to make god-awful mistakes. I mean, take that road, and, you know, it's like, remember we used to call it the Towering Inferno in the first workshop, because everybody was sitting on the floor improvising their horrible childhoods.
Uh-huh.
Remember when? And we knew it was might be scripted, so everybody was getting like, you know, it got more depressing. More depressing. Just, you know, And I remember Joe Papp coming in and sitting there with his staff. He had not been there. Mm-hmm. And Michael needed his input. And Joe sat there and Michael said, well, what do you think? And it was no music. And Marvin hadn't been, you know, employed. And Joe said, I think it's the greatest thing I've ever seen. And he had tears running.
Really?
And Michael said, get out of this theater. What good are you to me? I needed your help.
Wow.
So he just loved. So what I mean, when you think of the show now, and you know it better than anybody, it's so beautifully constructed. And all of those things that the mistakes, mm-hmm. let's call it, or the mm-hmm. choices that he fulfilled them enough to know what he really had to do. And sometimes he had to, but he had the courage to keep doing that mm-hmm. and trying it and then not working, throwing it out and finding, mm-hmm. solving that problem where as soon as he did the stages of growth, mm-hmm. you know, starting young and then getting adolescence.
Donna used to come in and say, oh, does anybody have change for
$5?
That's
called a movie. They put all the mistakes.
I said they took everything that we threw out because it didn't work. And they put it in the movie.
I told Cy Fuhrer that, by the way. I had lunch with him. I told him, I said, you must have gotten our first script because that stuff went out. They hated me. I could almost hear the
I know, but I even remember, it's unfortunate, but when my husband Lee Leonard was doing, I don't know what show he was doing, he's, you know, for the audience, a talk show host, and he had Attenborough, who directed the movie on, and as a guest, and he said to him, why did you not use the original cast? And he said, oh, they're too old now. This is a show about young people breaking into show business. And Lee didn't tell him that we were married. And I'm going, and that's when I mentioned to your producer, I said, he might be the only person who ever saw Chorus Line who didn't understand it. And he directed the movie. I mean, how it's not about, I think there are a few other things like fame and a few other things that are about young people breaking into show business. And that's why we were all too old, because we were like, you know, some of us were in our early 30s. So that's, which is what we were supposed to be in the show. You know, it was amazing.
Well, there's something for everyone. And it's just wonderful. I'm so proud of you all. And I'm so proud of the show and that, you know, that we were a part of that. I can appreciate, I mean, it's taken, I mean, I did appreciate it years ago. But mm-hmm. doing it, being able to do it all over the place, over the country, taking it to...
The real thing didn't ring for me till like 25 years later. I mean, I knew it, but 25 years
really
later,
right?
I'm working with kids who grew up listening to the album and all of that. And here's a perfect example, the best gift. Mandy Gonzalez, who is now in Hamilton. She was in the Heights. And
gorgeous singer,
I was playing
and
her mother.
Yeah.
And she's like this beautiful puppy dog. She's like, I call her Sunshine because she's just so positive. But she came barreling across, like, over the seats of the theater. Like, I'm so happy you're here. We're going to be working together, you know. And then she said, when I saw the Z at the end of your name, I knew that I could make it. Mm. You know, because with the Gonzalez.
Oh, Priscilla,
so what happened was that
so
I had an entire company of these young Latinos and Latinas who, you know, and I always felt so removed from that whole thing because it's been a very strange kind of whatever. So it was here and then here and here, and it's been
Then you realized how much you influenced your...
Yeah,
your
I did. I had no idea. I had no idea.
I knew it from the beginning. My cousin said, you better be good because all of Chinatown's going to be watching you. So I knew it from the beginning that everybody was depending on me.
Well,
can I offer some tea or a cappuccino, espresso?
Not for me. I'm going to have a little more of the coffee.
You want coffee? Yeah.
Could I ask you a big favor?
Yes.
Can I get this to go?
Of course.
I've been talking.
Is this to go?
Mine's
I've been
going
talking
right
so
here.
Much.
Mine's
right here.
Okay.
I think this is
cool.
Thank you, sir.
Yes.
And you'll wrap this up also.
I'll wrap that up as well.
Yeah. Oh, beautiful. Wow. Well, I want to, we're kind of winding down.
Yes, we are.
Is there anything anybody wants to say about...
I just want to say one thing. We all got so much from Michael Bennett, but the thing that always sticks in my brain, I don't know if he said it out loud or he said it to me, but he said it and it went into my head. He said, I'd rather you be strong and wrong than timid and right. you know, in terms of choices. And that has always stuck in my head.
Yeah.
And the truth is, when you're doing something, life is always bigger than what you see on stage.
Yes.
It just is.
Yeah.
People's reactions and how they... So it, that little saying has stuck in my brain and makes me very brave to be...
And he said to me, because I forgot my line one night, and he said, don't let your... you control your nerves. Don't let your nerves control you. And just take your time. Because he'd given me a note, and I took it, and I was just trying to, you know. And I just did not think through.
There's one thing he had years later when I worked on that workshop of Scandal, which never came about. And he had 890 Broadway. The chorus line just paid for his whole life and that dream rehearsal space and building. And we were up in the rehearsal room working on this ill-fated show, this ill-fated thing.
I was there too,
thing.
Remember?
Huh? Yeah, you were there too.
I was playing.
I did like a couple of versions of it. But what he had was, well, he first brought me and went in because he, the only female kind of grown-up he had in there was Susie Kurtz, who was playing the lead, and he said, she needs a girlfriend. He said, but you just kind of come in, and it wasn't that he, I think I'd contacted him a little earlier and said, I know that if there was anything I could do for you, anything, any work I could do for you, any role I could play, you would have called me. But I was thinking back about how joyful it was to be so creative and to work on things. So if you ever need me, let me know. And a while later, he called and said, we'll just come in. But the one thing that resonates to this day is that up above the mirrors in that vast studio, one of those many vast studios, there's a big like banner, and it said, simple is good.
Yeah.
And that's like the best thing you can say about acting. If you know, people are very impressed with certain acting styles, or they're either flamboyant or very, you know, sobbing all the time. Or blah, blah, blah. But it's the people. I mean, when I look at the actresses, I'm just going with the women that I really love. It's pure. It's simple.
Yeah.
It's straight. It's no gimmicks. It's no. It's no.
Well, it's
quirks,
what they call the actor's trust, too, right?
Yeah.
It's like less is more. Also, he felt that way about choreography. And let me tell you something. I think about that a lot when I'm now observing shows with some great talent out there, you know, choreographers and dancers. But it's like when invariably, and this goes back to those days as well, when a choreographer starts, they over-choreograph.
Yes.
It's like, I'm not enough. It's kind of what everybody goes through.
Mm-hmm.
And they put a step on every beat or, you know.
Yes.
And with the hip-hop generation, it's hard. Oh. It's really hard because the demand with the music is that kind of, that energy. So, but I remember when, I don't know, he just had such great things to impart, and he did it through his work.
Yeah.
It's one thing as we say goodbye today, but it won't be goodbye. It's it's till the next time,
us.
I hope.
Hasta la vista.
Yes, hasta la vista.
Are you speaking Spanish?
I'm going to have to learn Spanish. Oh, my God. Yeah, so you just...
Thank you for having us.
Oh, my gosh, it was such a pleasure. Yes. I know we could go on and on and on.
Oh, yeah, but, for sure.
All right, love you guys.
We will go on.
Thanks for the invite.
More later.
Thanks for the lunch, Donna. Thank you, Sardis.
Thank you.
I ate all of mine.
I ate all of mine, but I just might.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.